Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblight-focused podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tyrone, and joining me this week is Ryan. Good to have you back there, buddy. Good to be back, actually. It's been a little bit.
It has been some amount of time that was greater or less than the rest of time. Time is a weird fucking concept. I don't know how any of this works anymore.
Yeah, I hear you. It was kind of good, though. It was nice to get a little bit of a break. We had just finished our caster or warlock reviews. Not casters. Those are War Machine things. We have warlocks. Our warlock review series, and I was really happy with how that came out. What do you think?
Yeah, I was really happy to do it, even though that was the thing I was trying to do for like a year, and we just never had time because other shit kept happening.
Yeah, for sure.
Turns out the easiest way to do that is just shut everything else down, and then it's really easy to do.
Yeah, super simple.
Just next time we need something to happen, I'm just going to shut the entire world down for several months. It's fine.
Okay.
It's definitely spiraling out of control in the U.S. We're all fine here. Everything is fine.
Yeah, pay no attention to the closed border to the north. It's okay.
I'm still waiting for the construction of the privacy hedge. People are nice enough to not build a wall, but there will just be a privacy hedge.
We'll just shovel all of the snow towards the border next time. That's all.
Well, you fuckers don't use salt, so it'll be real easy to move, I'm sure.
Alright, we should probably talk about Legion. We've got a lot to talk about in the last, like, week and a half. Everything kind of happened all at once. What's that?
Also, I said there's some crazy shit going down. Also,
oh, for sure.
More important to any of that, I got a pair of kittens, so let's talk about that for a little bit. We're going to make this kitten cast.
All right, you go for it.
I have nothing else to say. They're just adorable. All
right.
If you don't have them, you should get some.
All right, cool. Cats are pretty sweet.
As you.
Yeah, I used to have some. They're cute. All right, let's talk about Legion and our own cool cats. Hungerford dropped by the Discord a few days ago and dropped some details on the CID. So the first thing is, there are going to be 24 legacy models included in the CID. That's a huge number.
That is a ridiculous amount of models.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to manage that. I assume a lot of this stuff has been like in the works for a long time, because I've had like, I'm pretty sure we've heard like rumblings about just like changes happening to the Nyss and like Bethane 1 for quite a while. So I assume this is just kind of the culmination of that. Like, I assume originally all this stuff would be part of a dynamic update, not go through CID, but it is kind of nice that we're getting an opportunity to look at it just before it goes live.
Yeah. And for the numbers geeks out there, I was running numbers earlier, and it's just over a third of the faction total, it looks like, that's getting looked at or getting adjusted in some way, whether that's, you know, a simple point adjustment or rules or whatever else. Like, it is a not insignificant amount of the total faction that is going to get touched here, as well as, you know, adding on new stuff. So it should hopefully lead to a lot better options and a lot more of an open feeling when you're designing lists, rather than saying, oh, well, I guess I have to play X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to bring a lot more versatility to lists with, I'm sure, like, things are going to pick up a bunch more options. It's really cool to see. So in addition to those 24 models, there's going to be 5 new models, including in the CID. Bethane 2, Blight Archon, Virtue Host, which is a 3-person unit, and a Virtue Champion, who is a solo. We're looking forward to seeing what their rules are all about, but they also announced that the Raya Quest model in the next starter box, it's currently in Kickstarter, Isilla, is going to be like a toxic ice witch, and she's going to be included in the CID as well.
Which is super dope. The rules for her got talked about on the meta with Jay Larson, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
I think like last week, 2 weeks. We'll get the link to that show in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, it was some amount of time, but she is pretty interesting. She is very much a support piece, but Hungy was nice enough to give Jay all of her rules, which I then shamelessly copied and shared with everybody, because y'all should know this stuff. She looks dope.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing her. We'll get to her rules in a little bit, but there are some little tiny tidbits that Hungerford did give us regarding what's going to be in CID. So, first off, our two Warlocks are Bethane 1, which we all expected, and Krissa, which I don't think any of us saw coming.
Yeah, I certainly didn't. I think we had a bet going on this for a while, and Cutter was saying that, yeah, it should be Krissa. There was rumblings a while back for a Krissa 2, and I'm not entirely sure if that was, like, early place, like, playtest for new Krissa or what, but there was a lot of chat about that. I think the main thing people want to look at, and I was hoping to get looked at, was the twins or Rias 1 or Saren, but I'm completely happy with Krissa getting an update. She is one of those casters that always seemed like she should be significantly better, especially if she was like the beginning Warlock that everyone started with. Like, there should be a clear purchase path of like, yeah, you get the battle box with Krissa, and then you build it into this thing, and then you can start switching things out. And that just never happened because she was terrible.
Yeah, I've been advocating for that for a while. Like, I'd always thought that being a Legionnaire herself, it would have been interesting to, like, include something about Legionnaires on her card. And then in that way, you give even just new players a purchase path, like you said, like, okay, I'm going to get some Legionnaires in the UA to go with Krissa because she makes them better. And then I'll get Azrael, her character beast, because that is a good way to go. You know, people will be encouraged to pick those things up. And unfortunately, like, yeah, you had Krissa, but you didn't really play her because, like you said, she's kind of boring.
Yeah, she was just not good. Like, she had lists that worked, but they were very few and far between, and honestly very uninspired, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't think we know any of her actual changes. We just know that she's getting changed. I don't think they've spoiled anything about her changes, though, correct?
That's right. But we did get a couple little tidbits for Bethane 1. Sounds like she's getting deceleration. And other new spells, a new feat, which we don't know if that's a new feat or a rehash of an old feat, you know, could be either way, and Belphegor's new, and then he kind of trailed, this was all from Hungerford, he kind of trailed off at the end there, kind of leaving us in suspense, which, you know, typical Hungerford, leaving us wanting more, but Bethane 1, getting an overhaul, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Hungerford trolling like Hamilton does. It's almost like these guys all hang out or something.
Yeah.
They're all jerks. I don't like it.
For sure.
But yeah. So Bethane getting, sounds like decel, almost guaranteed, I would say.
Yeah, he made it pretty clear she's getting decel, which, like, that's new to Legion, and I think that's going to be super important for us going forward.
Yep. Wish it would have been on Thags too, but I will take it wherever it shows up. I am sick of dying to guns just trivially. But new spells, new feat. Like you said, I don't know if that's a completely new feat or if it's just going to be, hey, here's her Mark II feat back. It could go one way or the other. It kind of depends on the direction they want to go with her. I started a chat in the Discord the other day about, you know, if you could change her spell list and her feat and everything at all, you know, what would you want it to be? And the consensus seemed to be leave her spell list as it is, add decel, maybe swap out Bloodthorn for it, but otherwise leave it as is. Give her Mark II feat back, and, you know, with some minor changes to Belphegor and 4 or 5 War Beast points, a lot of people felt that she would be fine just like that.
Yeah.
Interesting Warlock that had a lot of different playstyle and a lot of different outs, and that, I think, goes to show you, mind you, it's a little bit of armchair development, that, you know, there's not a lot that needs to be changed with her, but the things that need to be changed are things that need to be changed. And that's kind of interesting to see. Normally, if you give somebody the option in a community that says, hey, how would you want to change this? You know, they come up with, oh, well, give it free this and free that and add these rules and TK because fuck it, why not? And that wasn't a thing that happened. People were very, restrained, were very, you know, realistic about, hey, here are the changes that I would want to see to get her on the table because I like her. And I think that's neat.
Yeah, I don't know if that's unique to Legion, but it's definitely a defining aspect of, like, our communities. It's just like, we know kind of where things are. We know kind of what they need to have to be, like, playable So we're kind of just like, all right, just give us this, you know, and we'll be happy for a little while. Let us try it out and see where it's at. But I trust Hungerford is going to bring cool and interesting changes. My only thing regarding the Mark II feat is I've thought for a while now that with the with the creation of the Ice Witches, with the change to the throne, that the Mark II feat might just be too good in this day and age. But I could be just off base there. But we'll see what happens.
Yep, it's all up in the air. It could be anything at this point, right? We just know that she's getting changed. It sounds like Belphegor is getting some kind of a rework or some new abilities, maybe. You know, she's definitely getting some new spells and a new feat, and it should be interesting to get her back on the table. It should be interesting just to see her again, depending on where she ends up. And, you know, I think, you know, she was one of the big blunders coming into Mark III was that they changed her and made her not completely unplayable, but practically unplayable, right? Like,
yeah.
It was just so hard to get use out of her kit that I think, mind you, it took a couple of years, but recognizing that and saying, okay, we tried this, it clearly didn't work. Here's, you know, getting an explanation as to, like, you would normally get in a CID that says, hey, here's the design space we want her to be in. Here's the kind of things we're expecting her to do. And then being able to say, okay, this works because of X, Y, and Z, or it doesn't work, and have that direct feedback, I think, is important. Especially with a caster like her, who is very unique amongst casters.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. A couple notes on beasts. We're going to have about 9 to 10 beasts in the CID. I guess that number is kind of up in the air. But specifically, we're going to see character beasts and some Nephilim, which there's probably a little bit of overlap there. Like Azrael and Zeriel could do some changes, and they're kind of both. That's exciting.
We don't know for sure if one or both of them will be in there. They did just say character beast, so, you know, Typhon might be getting looked at again, or possibly Proteus. Belphegor technically counts as a character beast, so he might have gotten rolled into there, right? Like, they could be being sneaky about it just to get people off the actual trail. You don't know. But it's important to know that those are in there, and that, like I had said, I think if it's 10 beasts out of our current stable, which, if I'm remembering correctly, I was either 23 or 27 beasts we have total. Like, that's, again, like a third of our beast stable that's getting looked at. And that's a not insignificant amount of things to try and look at and go over.
Yeah, I think the main thing we got to keep in mind is the CID is going to deal with a large number of models. Like, 29 in total is huge. It's enormous. So,
yeah, especially when you're not doing actual battle reports to try and get changes. It's more of a, hey, theoretically, how would this play? And I think that's going to lead into a lot more of hyperbole and hypothetical discussion rather than anything backed up with any kind of fact. So I think it's going to be important to keep your wits about you and not go off the deep end.
Yeah.
Especially if you're playing or looking at the stuff from either side, you know, keep a level head and not do the stupidity of, oh, well, this could do X, Y, and Z in every single game. It's like, the amount of setup it would take to do that is ridiculous. Yeah, but it could do it. It's like, sure.
Yeah.
But if spending, you know, 50 points and 5 activations to do that thing, whatever it is, like, okay, then you kind of deserve to have a big payoff for that because you're spending a ridiculous amount of time and resources on it.
Yeah, and we'll get into the CID kind of rules and guidelines. Hungerford posted a pretty good breakdown of what he hopes to see out of it, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
Important beast change they brought up was the Angelius. That one is for sure going to be there.
Yes.
So that's getting at least a 2-point drop. According to Hungerford, he said something along the lines of, and I might be paraphrasing, we looked at the Angelius, and then we looked at the Nerof, and then we looked back at the Angelius, and then back at the Nerof, and suddenly the Angelius was 15 points. And also, it's getting 2 other changes. So apparently, all it takes to get the changes to the Angel is to compare it to its, you know, biggest rival, and suddenly it looks super overcosted, which it is.
Yeah.
A 2-point drop isn't going to fix all of its problems, but it certainly isn't going to hurt.
Definitely.
Not to mention, you know, whatever the other 2 changes are going to be, which they're keeping close to the vest. They're not telling us anything.
Yeah. So that does lead in pretty clean into saying, like, not everything is going to get a huge change. Like, the Angelia is going down a couple of points and gaining, like, you know, a little bit here and there, are not big changes, and I don't think we'll see big changes in the majority of the CID, but he did take a moment to say, like, some changes are just minor point changes, and he specifically cited Anissa in this case, who will definitely benefit from a point reduction.
Yeah, for a lot of things, though, you know, it's about being realistic, and it's about remembering that if you play the faction, you're allowed to have nice things. If you don't play the faction, then other factions are allowed to have nice things. Everything doesn't need to be nerfed into the ground because you don't like it. Like, people are allowed to have things that are good so long as they're not, like, game-warpingly busted. Like, Lord of the Feast was game-warping. They knocked him down a little bit, and now he's just good. And there's nothing wrong with having good things in the game. It's just important to keep, again, your head on you and not go off the deep end with some of this stuff. And I think some of the stuff that we need changes to are, realistically, are just going to be point changes. There's not, you don't need more special rules added to some of the stuff. It just needs to be worth, you know, the points it costs. So, like, Anissa at being 8 points, maybe the only change she gets is a point drop to 7, or maybe even 6.
I would play her at 6.
Yeah, maybe she becomes a rec option if she becomes 7 or 6 points in Ravens. That might be all she needs to see the table then.
Yeah,
flat out. Like, she might be good enough for that, and it's important to just look at it and not immediately go, oh, well, it's only a 1 point drop, I'm still not going to take her. Like, yeah, but if it's a 1 point drop and she becomes a rec option, are you not going to take her? Is there no list that you could see taking that in? Really? Like, I don't know. I find it hard to offhandedly dismiss something like that immediately, you know?
Yeah, so let's go back. You mentioned rules changes, and we did get a couple previews regarding that. Mainly against the Swordsman, along with the UA. They're going to gain Blade Shield base, and the Abbot gains a set of prayers.
Did they say they were getting it base, or just that they were gaining it? I didn't catch that entire thing on Facebook or Discord or whatever.
You may be right, but it read like they were just going to have it.
Okay. I was going to say that might end up being one of the prayers the Abbot gets. It's just pray Blade Shield.
That seems unlikely. Okay. If anything, that's like a UA thing, but yeah.
So it's possible it could go either way, I guess. But if they're just going to have it base, like, that seems fine.
Yeah, they're like, what, def 16 against shooting then?
Yeah, def 16 against shooting. 18 with, you know, a couple casters. Thags 1, Krissa, if she keeps Ashen Veil. Bethane, if she keeps Ashen Veil. If, you know, maybe one of the prayers is they gain Pathfinder, then they can be 16 up to 20 if they're standing in cover. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good number.
Turns out that your random old Winter Guard or, you know, whatever POW 12s your opponent happens to have are going to have a real hard time picking them off then in any great quantity. And one of their big problems for, like, Swordsmen especially was delivering them. They died before you could get them there. If you can find a way to make it so that some of them are going to get there, well, then it might be worth taking them.
Yep, and I think you're absolutely right on that. So I think that does also kind of indicate the level of changes that some of these units are going to see. Like, deliverability is an issue for Swordsmen. Legionnaires, like, I don't know what their issue is other than just not being good. But, like, they could pick up, like, some more damage somehow, or, you know, or not immediately die, even with their armor buff. I don't know.
So, with, in my opinion, and, you know, this is just my opinion, with a lot of the Nis units, their issue was there was no way to deliver them. They had a very static threat range just across the board. There was no or almost no way to speed them up because we didn't/don't really have any unit level speed buffs.
Yeah.
Aside from Rias 1, I think, is the only one.
Yeah, I think you're right. He has dash, and that's basically it.
Yeah. So everything has a very static threat range, and it has victim defensive stats. If you can change one of those two things, or, you know, give a moderate amount into both, then suddenly a lot of these units get more interesting. If, you know, Swordsmen pick up Blade Shield, and, like I said, maybe one of the Abbot's prayers is Pathfinder, or even Relentless Charge. That might be enough to get them on the table, because now suddenly they're just not dying on the approach, and they can actually, you know, get somewhere instead of getting bogged down by literally any terrain that could help them. If archers, they went to their Mark II feat with, or not feat, Mark II incarnation with the ammo porter, which, for those of you who don't know, was, as long as they were in command, they got rate of fire 2. And then if they aimed, they gained an additional shot, like trench or long gunners, but it was just in command. If they go back to that, then suddenly they can aim and be rate of fire 3. Like, holy shit, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's a lot. It'd be too much.
They're still only rat 5, pow 10. Like, you're going to need to CRA to do damage, but suddenly they're a strong fire base that can actually be a threat to something and don't just trivially die to blasts because they can spread out a little bit more.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's something to think about. Like, their defensive stats would still be absolute garbage because I think they're like 13-11. But
God, something like that, yeah.
It requires an activation on your opponent's side of the table to start removing them instead of just going, I'll ignore them for 3 turns and then they'll get one shot and I'll just throw this AoE 3 at them and look at that, the unit's not a problem anymore.
All right.
Legionnaires, if, you know, they found a way to get Pathfinder, their vengeance attacks were somehow more meaningful because literally nobody is scared of a Pow 10. If, you know, they had a way to, again, get delivered, or there's been talk of giving them like Sack Pawn or Shield Guard or something like that, so they had a purpose on the field, I think that's all it would take to see them. And hopefully with, you know, the changes, that's what we're going to get, is some of the stuff's, the purpose it's supposed to fill is going to be more defined and they'll actually fit into it, as opposed to, they're dudes, they do dude things, like, cool, what does that mean? Don't worry about it. Like, fucking what?
there's going to be a lot of changes to Nyss, and we know that because of the theme changes. Thrones are being added to Children of the Dragon. The Virtues and Issylla go in both Children and Oracles. The Blade Archon is in every Legion theme. And I think obviously that means, you know, the focus is on Children of the Dragon and Oracles for the CID. So Nyss Infantry, definitely. A bunch of beasts, because they're applicable anywhere. I don't think we'll see the Throne, because the Throne's in a really good place. Maybe you could stand to come down a point, but I'm not gonna fight for that. But yeah, that's what we know regarding the themes. I know Hungerford, it was brought up to Hungerford that our tactician bonus on Children of the Dragon is worded slightly incorrectly when you compare it to every other tactician bonus in the game. It does make things a little awkward on the tabletop, so hopefully that gets fixed. And finally, he mentioned that the corrosion effect of oracles is especially potent with the new models. So why don't we talk quickly about the Virtue Host and the Virtue Champion and what we know about them?
Sure. They are dope-looking models, in my opinion. I know there's been some contention about that, but anyone who says otherwise is wrong and can go fuck themselves. So I will publicly say that. Fight me. But we posted the... what's it called? Tyrone, help me out here. What the hell is it called?
I'm not sure what you're referring to. I'm sorry.
The thing they posted that I reposted on the page. Solicitation. There we go.
Ah, yes.
I got there eventually. I'll help you. Thanks a lot. They posted the solicitation for the champion and the virtues, and it sounds like they're going to be both melee fighters and have some ranged abilities, which is going to be nice. We don't typically have units that can do both. I don't think we have any units besides Raptors that can do both.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
But we also found out that they're going to have an ability called Peel Back the Layers.
Oh, God. It's awful.
It sounds gross, right?
It's so gross.
But what that is effectively going to do is the Virtue Hosts, as well as the Champions, are going to get boosted attack and damage against an enemy suffering continuous corrosion.
Melee attack and damage.
Melee attack and damage, correct. And apparently both have multiple melee attacks. So if they have, you know, sprays or shots or AoEs or something that can apply corrosion, then you're going in at whatever boosted on the charge damage roll because it was a charge. And then your second attack is both boosted attack and damage. And maybe the champion is not rapid strike or something, so it might even get a third.
That'd be cool.
Right, that would be kind of neat, but it gives them a lot of play into, you know, hey, I'm gonna, let's assume they have like 6-inch sprays, right? They can assault a heavy, maybe hit a guy or two standing next to it that are now going to be corroded. From what it sounds like, near the champions, corrosion isn't going to go out.
Yeah, I definitely get that feeling as well. So
then, you know, maybe you spray, say, 4 or 5 guys total. You do all this damage to the heavy, either cripple it, kill it, or, you know, just put a bunch of damage into it. And now the start of your next turn, those four or five guys just all take a point, which for single wound infantry, like Legion of Lost Souls, like anything in flames, that number one doesn't trigger vengeance, which is huge. And then number two just auto removes it at the start of your opponent's turn before it can vengeance, before it can do anything else. Like, that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, corrosion's like a decent rule against, especially right now we're seeing a lot of single wound infantry and they really don't like to be corroded. If we can put out a good quality of corrosion attacks, like that's just going to burn a ton of your opponent's clock. So that obviously becomes a win condition, never something you should count on, but keep in mind it is there available for you to play with.
Yep, if you can start throwing corrosion on things on turn two or three, and then throw in like the Archangel or trying to think what else has continuous fire.
Crit fire on the Tariff. Typhon does not. Sorry, Carnivane does. Zuriel does. Azrael does.
Yep. So you throw in a couple Carni sprays on things, and then you start throwing corrosion out. Like, you can make people start taking just damage rolls at the start of their turn, which is huge. And then if you start doing it early game, say your entire list is based around just continuous effects, like by turn two or three, and then you have to play that to turn seven, you might burn a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes off your opponent's clock just in the time that it takes them to have to roll those checks every turn.
Yep. Like,
if you're playing to turn seven, if you've got a 2 minute advantage on your opponent by turn seven, like that can give you enough time to think and actually, you know, make the right plays and not be in a position where you're going to make a mistake. That's huge.
Yeah. And I think this is a good time to mention that the Oracle's theme benefit is continuous corrosion. It's kind of awkwardly applied, to be fair, but because it's applied during your opponent's turn, it's available for you to make use of with peel back the layers on your turn. So that's actually kind of like a neat interaction. So I'm actually like looking forward to making use of that, and I am probably just going to buy two more Gatorman husks because they seem insane.
They're already good models, and they definitely will help out there. And like you said, because it's applied on your opponent's turn, it's a little awkward because it's blighted models apply it, which is, you know, like the minion models or hex hunters, ice witches. But like your beasts aren't blighted, thrones aren't blighted. A bunch of things that you would kind of think they are, like Forsaken or Spell Martyrs, aren't technically blighted. So you have to watch the tags and what actually would affect it and what doesn't. But yeah, it's certainly a neat little interaction, and it's not going to hurt to have one more ability that triggers or one thing that your opponent has to remember is there, especially if you can start stacking buffs on it. If, you know, the Archon gets a bonus against things that are corroded, but I don't know for sure if it does, but it kind of seems that, you know, both the Archon and the Virtues and Beth are all going to do something with corrosion. They're all going to be, you know, helping each other out there. That it certainly isn't going to hurt to be able to apply it and just make it another thing that if my heavy goes in and doesn't kill everything, it's going to be corroded, and that's going to let this Archon come in and just do a ton of damage, or let Virtues come in and just do a ton of damage, or, you know, Beth is going to be able to cast this spell or do this thing. Like, it leads to a lot of different scenarios where you get to just play your game and it's things your opponent is going to have to remember or, you know, pay the price for it.
Yeah. And like, I'm just excited for this so much. I really am. But we will include a link, or rather we'll include a list of what is and what isn't blighted in Legion in the show notes. I worked that out a little while ago because I was curious in regards to that theme benefit. So I'll share that list with everyone. It makes sense once you look at it. I know you've explained it to me, and like for the most part, it makes sense. There are a couple odd exclusions, but yeah.
It's also weird. Like, okay, I understand why all of these things are, but some of it seems like it should be like thrones. In my mind, I look at them and are like, okay, this is definitely a giant blight octopus with a Nis on top. This thing should definitely have be blighted. Like, there's no way this like giant tentacle thing occurred naturally, but yet it's not. That fuck if I know why. Or like Forsaken, from all the fluff, they're literally blightedness that just continued to blight and never really stopped. And now suddenly they just became so draconic that it's like, well, Frank is just this thing now instead of a person. It'll be fine. And they don't have the blighted tag for some god-awful reason. You'd think they would, but they don't.
And yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, so we'll put that list in the show notes. Let's quickly reiterate what the meta shared with us regarding Issylla, the Riot Quest Ice Witch solo. Just quickly, your base stats: speed 6, rat 5, mat 4, def 14, arm 11. Hungerford came by later and mentioned that she actually has no weapons whatsoever, so she's purely a spellcaster. Immunity to cold and corrosion, and has stealth. This is a solid start for a solo.
Yep, Matt and Red are irrelevant, because why wouldn't they be? but, I mean, she's got a solid, well, she has Ice Witch defensive stats, but base stealth is super useful. Hopefully she keeps Pathfinder like the rest of the Ice Witches. They didn't say she had it.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
But I'm hoping she does if she follows their lead, but she might not, you never know.
Yeah, some people forget Pathfinder sometimes, you know, it happens. Yeah.
But speed 6 is reasonable. The more important number that we didn't say yet is she's magic ability 8.
She sure is.
And that is a number you don't see very often on a solo, but is super nice to have.
Yeah, and she's going to make good use of that magic 8 because she has a new ability, I believe. It's called Unleash the Arcane. It reads, once per turn, when this model hits an enemy model with a magic attack, immediately after the attack is resolved, this model may make a magic attack or magic ability special action. Ryan, why don't you tell us what she'll be casting?
Ooh, see, she's got an interesting spell list. So, first of all, she has Puppet Master.
Yes.
Range 10. Force a reroll on an opponent, or, you know, give yourself one. Important to note, Unleash the Arcane will not work if you just cast Puppet Master on one of your own units, because it has to hit an enemy model, but it will work if you throw a Puppet Master at somebody else's model. So, throw out a Puppet Master first, and then get your second free spell to Puppet Master one of your own things, or do one of her other spells. Her second spell, which I think is the super interesting one, is she gets Shatterstorm. Yes, that Shatterstorm.
Yeah, exactly.
The same one that is an upkeep in other factions that we have never had. From what Hungerford had said, it is in fact the exact same spell. I don't know if it's going to get reworded to just work as a magic ability, or if they're just going to say, no, she has it, but because she doesn't have Fury stat, she has no way of upkeeping it. Very well could be.
Yeah, it's probably one of those situations where you just print it on the card and everyone accepts that it works.
I mean, there's no reason it wouldn't work, right?
Yeah.
If she's magic ability 8, and they just say, yeah, she can cast this as an action, like, okay, sure. But for those of you who don't know what that does, it reads, a target-friendly faction model unit gains detonator. When a model with detonator directly hits and boxes an enemy model with a ranged or melee attack, center a 3-inch AoE on the box model, then remove that model from play. Models in the AoE are hit and suffer an unboostable POW 8 magic blast damage roll.
That's a good ability.
Yeah, that gives you RFP on demand in any list, which is a thing we don't have an awful lot of, but is super nice to have, especially, again, with, like, Legion of Lost Souls running around. Being able to just go, hey, the blast might not do anything, but if I can remove 4 or 5 dudes from that unit, I'm absolutely just going to remove 4 or 5 dudes from that unit and go the fuck away. I don't have to worry about you coming back.
Like, that's dope. That's really important. All right, she's got one more spell. Why don't you tell us that one?
Yeah. Her other spell is... Oh, I actually have to look up what the hell it's called now, because I was, like, off of memory. I was the one that printed all this... Well, I was the one who stole all of this. Stole. Yeah, let's go with that. Oh, my God. I don't... Why are you doing this to me? There we go. Her third spell is Toxic Blizzard. It's a range 10, AoE 4. Models hit take a POW 10 cold damage roll and suffer continuous corrosion. So, there is a super nice thing where you can throw a Toxic Blizzard out at range 10 at an enemy model, trigger Unleash the Arcane, and then do it again, and hit 2 entire units with an AoE 4. Now, it's only POW 10, so meh on the POW, but everything in the AoE suffers continuous corrosion. And as previously stated, virtues really like that. And the virtue champions really like that you can just set entire units on corroded. I was going to say on fire, but that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Set entire units on acid. Yeah, sure. Let's just assume they're tripping balls. That's fine. gets them all acided up. And then a, you know, champion walks over and just says, cool, you're all going to die the start of your next turn. Like, yeah, sure, it might stop you from scoring a point for a turn. Like, there's definitely some weird interactions there. But at the start of your opponent's next turn, a whole bunch of stuff just auto takes a point. And if, again, it's like a Flames list or a Doom Reaver list or something like that, it's going to force an awful lot of tough checks or just kill them. Same thing with, like, Immortals. Oh, man, it's all 2 feet turn and you're, like, arm 25? Eh, I guess I just wait till the start of your turn and all of your stuff dies. Darn, what a shame.
How terrible.
I'd say I feel bad, but you're playing Zal, so I don't feel too bad.
So I think that basically wraps up everything we kind of know in advance. Ooh, I got the hiccups just now, so that's fun. So why don't we... Did I miss anything, Ryan, before I shut this down in that way?
I don't think so. I think okay. That's all the stuff that we got a heads up on.
All right, so...
Well, wait, do we want to bring on our... Do we want to talk a little about who's going to be joining us later this week?
We'll get to that later. In a little bit. What I would like to go over is Hungerford recently posted in the War Machine Hordes General Facebook page some guidance, we'll say, regarding the CID.
Guidance, recommendations, a gentle nudge in the correct direction.
Yeah, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I will read his little intro. He says, hey all, the Legion CID is slated to begin this Wednesday. Because this is a no battle reports accepted CID, I made sure to include a section to indicate the type of feedback we are looking for. Because I want this unorthodox CID to go as smoothly as possible, feel free to look at these notes and let me know if anything feels unclear to you in regards of what we're looking for. And he lays out a few things that he wants to kind of explain. The first thing is that list building, you know, what kind of lists you're going to build, the tactics and strategies that you plan to utilize in that list. And ultimately he says, imagine you're explaining the list in a tactics article. So, and he also labels this as high priority. So this is something that he wants people to focus on, like come up with a list, tell us how you're going to use it. And what things might be missing from that list that, you know, aren't there, or things that are in that list that you're really excited about. I think that's kind of what he's looking for. The strengths and weaknesses, you know, why you chose those models, stuff like that.
So it seems like it's, okay, post a list and then break that list down. Say, okay, here's the strengths of the list. Here are the things that I would intend to play it into if I was going to a steamroller, if I was doing X, Y, and Z. Here are the things that I think it's going to be good at, and here are the reasons why. Here are the things that I think it'll be bad into, and the reasons why. Imagine it like you're explaining it to, like, imagine it like you just played that list into somebody who has never played your faction, and they're going, wow, that worked really well. What did you do? What was your thought into this? What was your thought into this that I was going to do? You know, really have an explanation and be able to talk about, okay, I put, you know, 3 units of virtues in the list, or 2 units of virtues and this archon in the list because I wanted it to do X, Y, and Z. You know, if you just post a list and say, oh, well, I thought it'd be cool together. Like, yeah, it might be, but that doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, that's not valuable.
Be able to, you know, articulate in one way or another, hey, I built this list and here are the things I think it'll be good at and the reasons why. Here are the things that I think it'll be poor into and the reasons why. Here are the types of tactics that I'm going to try and do. I want to overlay these abilities to do this thing overall, or, you know, these models are probably going to spend 3 or 4 turns just being in the back line, but then in the late game, they're going to be able to do X, Y, and Z, hopefully. It's really, think of any article you've read from, like, Line of Sight, try and break it down that way. And if you haven't read any of their stuff, I really recommend you do, because they get really in-depth with it sometimes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they have to say. But point number 2, he lists interactions. So I will just read this whole thing, or most of it again. Discuss specific interactions and combos you see with the new models and model changes. Maybe you find something you think is busted rules-wise, let us know. They aren't looking for, quote, this model with this point cost is too powerful. They are looking for, if I use this model and this ability in combination with this other aspect of Legion, I can achieve this effect, and here's what I think about that. You know, like, that's obviously the way they want you to look at it. Like, you know, don't be like, oh, this ability is way too good. Be like, no, this ability with other things maybe needs to get looked at, because I don't think any one ability by itself is ever necessarily problematic.
No. I think of it like, you know, if you take virtues, and we don't know very much on them, so let's assume that they're like POW 12, right?
Sure.
So you take that virtues and then say, oh, well, I took virtues with Animag and a Blightbringer and the Black Frost Shard in Oracles. And now, you know, virtues were getting up to POW 18, plus they were double boosted because of this other stuff. Like, a three-man unit can casually kill, you know, a heavy at that point level, or maybe two of them are casually killing a colossal, and that might be too much. Like, that's the kind of thing they're looking for, is, hey, you know, one unit by itself is probably completely acceptable, right? But once you start stacking on buffs, or once you start stacking interactions together, where you end up with, like, the Fiona befuddle countercharge bullshit, it's that kind of thing that they're looking for, is, okay, is this too strong, or is there counterplay to it? If there's not counterplay to it, why is it strong? What do you have to put into it to get that effect? You know, like I had said earlier, if you're putting 50 points plus into an interaction and several model activations, they might be okay with it existing because you're putting a huge chunk of your army and a lot of activations into making it happen. But if you can casually say, oh, well, you know, I moved this here, and the way, you know, this is worded, I got to do X, Y, and Z, and suddenly I just murdered this entire unit. Well, okay, yeah, that might be a little much. You should probably be looked at least a little bit.
Yeah. So I think that's a good point. And the last thing that Hungerford mentions is general theory, which is a lot of what we tend to see in CID. Like, the theory and list building section is very busy with people just coming up with, you know, all this, and so on. But he marks that as low priority, and he cites an example of, you know, something that might be useful would be, a discussion on why you think all NIST models should be speed 7, but do not post in relation to a specific army list or rules interaction. Like, if you just say, oh, NIST should be speed 7, but don't give any context for that, that's not something they're looking for. Like, okay, I'm happy you think they should be speed 7, but, you know, if you don't provide any other details, that's not useful feedback, right?
Right. So if you say, oh, well, I think all NIST should be speed 7, well, okay, yeah, that might spur an interesting discussion. You might get people saying, well, yeah, if they were speed 7, you could have this interaction or this. Like, you might be able to turn that into something constructive, but it seems like a thing that the devs aren't going to be paying attention to as much because you're not starting off with a strong premise. Whereas if you came in and said, hey, you know, I think the Virtue Champ should have desperate pace because, you know, virtues are X, Y, and Z, and you can, you know, give a good reason for it, or maybe list off some interactions or some other things that would, you know, be affected by that, then that becomes a lot more valuable feedback rather than just, you know, Jimmy Dipshit saying, oh, I think this. Fuck you. No one cares.
Yeah. So, you know, we want the CID to go smoothly. We want people to provide feedback. And obviously the developers do too. But we do have to keep in mind that the CID is going to have a substantial amount of legacy changes. Because again, this is Hungerford words. These are Hungerford's words, rather. The legacy changes are focused primarily on Legion models usable in the Children of the Dragon and Oracles of Annihilation theme forces. This also includes many war beasts that we felt needed to be adjusted. And here is the important bit. If a model is not listed in this CID, we are not accepting feedback on it at this time. Focus on what's in it. Don't focus on anything else.
So if somebody, again, posts a random thread that says, well, I think Hellmouths are too powerful.
Oh my God.
Somebody's going to do it.
I know.
Somebody's going to go in there and say, well, I think this is this, and it's going to get shut down. And there's going to be several discussions about, well, yeah, this unit is, you know, really easy to kill, but Hellmouths are really not. And that's the comparison I'm going to choose to make. Like, everybody knows what you're doing, but also you're being a shithead for doing it. So if you see comments like that, don't respond to them. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your breath. Don't waste your energy. Ignore them. The devs certainly are going to, from what it sounds like.
Yeah.
There's no point in getting into arguments about shit that's not in there. Somebody wants to come in and say that, well, I think Hellmouths are too strong, or yeah, but Animag is really powerful and she ran the meta for 2 months. Like, that's great. none of that matters now.
Yeah.
But the other thing I want to, you know, reiterate, like I said earlier, it's important to remember, and I know there's a lot of people in Legion that like to say, well, yeah, but I want to try and make a fair and balanced game. And everybody does. But having a fair and balanced game doesn't mean you need to give ground on everything. It doesn't mean you need to say, well, it's my job to give up rules and give up interactions and give up things that are strong and good to make it easier for other people. It is one thing if the rules and interactions are blatantly broken or they're a, you know, bad game experience. It is another thing to just have good models. And I noticed this with the last CID, and I feel like I'm going to see it again. There is a definite brand of person who goes on there and says, well, I think that we should just make my stuff weaker so it's easier for other people. Like, no, you are allowed to have good things. You are allowed to challenge people and make them have to figure out how to beat you in ways that maybe they're not able to do currently. Maybe, you know, the current meta list isn't a good answer into Beth 2 with double Archons and 3 units of Virtues. And that's okay. That doesn't mean those models need to be worse. It means that maybe the Flames list needs to change to other options that it has to deal with them. Maybe, you know, a faction can't just bank on 2 or 3 casters. Maybe they need to look and say, hey, I have better options that can handle this, but it's going to make it harder for me. Well, sucks to be you, buddy. Then I guess it's going to be a little harder for you. Welcome to the last 3 years of our life. Fucking deal with it.
Yeah, no, for sure, man, for sure. And, you know, so CID is always an opportunity for the community to either come together or self-destruct. So we'll see how it goes, but I am looking forward to it.
I am very much looking forward to it, and I fully expect that I'm going to spend the next week yelling at people for being idiots. So if you happen to catch me on the Discord and I happen to be in a feisty mood, I'm going to apologize ahead of time because, I've been probably dealing with idiots all day, and it's just, I'm already doing that, and it's taking a toll on me. This is not going to help. I'm calling it right now.
Oh, my God. All right. I think that will do it. Links to basically everything that we talked about will be provided in the show notes, as usual. Ryan, what are you excited to play? Like, what are you excited to think about for the CID?
So the things that are exciting me is number one, Beth 2. I always love new casters.
Yeah.
It's cool to rehash and like rework old casters, but I'm always super excited to see a brand new caster. I'm always super excited to see the design space they go for them, especially with CID, because it used to just be you'd get a caster and you wouldn't get a lot of information on them. They would just release it. And you kind of had to figure out like, okay, what were the devs trying to do here? It's one of the nice things I really like about CID is that you get that dev perspective where they say, hey, we really want this caster to fill this niche and we want it to do X, Y, and Z. And getting an idea, you know, straight from the source of, okay, you know, X caster should be doing these things, that is always just super neat to kind of see and have an idea of what they're trying to focus it on. So I'm super excited about her. I am super excited about Archons because again, I don't understand some of the hate, but like, I love the way that model looks. It just looks cool to me. And I'm looking forward to painting that up, probably 2 or 3 of them. And then having a true lesser warlock, I'm assuming it can take lights and heavies. We haven't gotten confirmation one way or the other, so could be very wrong here.
I would hope so.
I think it'd be weird if it couldn't at least take lights. Like, if they just gave us another one, we're like, yeah, it can only take lessers. Like, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
But if it can at least take lights, like, that's probably enough to get me to play at least one of them. Because, you know, you look at, like, a rake. Like, suddenly you have a rake on a Fury 4 or 5 lesser warlock that can now be 16 or 20 inches away. That might be enough to bring it back in for me into a couple matches because, you know, depending on its spell list and what else it's doing, like, that can be pretty strong as just like a flanking setup for like Ryas or any of the Liliths or Abby, you know, the casters that have a hard time playing wide. So getting some of those lesser utilized casters or ones that have some very glaring defects into certain scenarios and certain elements, being able to get them on the table and kind of not necessarily remove that problem, but allow them to play either more safely or a little bit more of the game they want to be playing, that is super exciting to me.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm most interested in how the Blight Archon changes our low fury warlocks. And by that I mean, like, if you look at our low fury warlocks and the ones that aren't really being played, like Lilith 1, Lilith 2, Ryas 1, and even Krista, she's going to be in the CID, who knows what happens with her, but like those warlocks have non-battle group specific feats and spells. So I personally wonder how that's going to turn out for them. Like, it's going to allow them to spread out a lot more. You know, you can't apply your feet in a wider area, but you get to utilize a lot more of the table because you're not limited by your control area as much when you have a competent lesser warlock with you. So I'm interested to see how those warlocks shape up in the coming, you know, months and year, because those are game changers for them. Like, a Blight Archon, if it's at all offensively minded, is going to be really good with Lilith. It's going to be really good with Ryas, I have to imagine. Like, there's a lot there that I think those kind of interactions are what I'm really excited about.
Can you imagine, like, Lilith 2, if the Blight Archon has a gun or a spray? Like, if it has a Blight Archon spray, can you imagine running two of them and just being like, yeah, so now I get, you know, four sprays on top of what I get from the battle group, on top of if archers get buffed up a little bit, like suddenly Legion Gunlines might be able to come back and not just be reliant on Ravagors. Like,
yeah,
could be huge.
And then whatever is in the Blight Archon's battle group, because you got to take something anyway, throw a gun beast on it.
Yeah, throw a Tariff on it.
Cool. I like it. Tariff still AD. Oh, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
You, 2 4-inch AoEs off the Tariff, or you throw, you know, 2 or 3 Stingers on it. Suddenly you're now getting out. Again, assuming this thing has like a Void Archon spray, because that's the only, I don't think it's going to get shot types like the Thamorite.
No, probably not.
I think that's probably the most likely, but assume it has a spray like that, or even if it just has like a POW 14 shot. If it can throw out, you know, 2 sprays or 2 shots, and then you take 2 or 3 Stingers with it, now it has Counter Blast. So if something ends within its command range, it's going to take another shot. Now the Stingers on feet turn get to go up, and that's 2 6-inch sprays out of each one of them. Like, you could throw an absurd amount of fire onto the field. Mind you, maybe it's relatively short ranged, but into, again, Doom Reavers, into Flames, into Infernals, like, that might be enough.
Yeah, I'm really excited for how that, just that one model, I think, is going to transform our low fury casters in a really interesting way.
Yeah, I think it's going to open up a lot of options, depending on its point cost, its spell list, obviously. And then what it is allowed to take, because again, even if it can only take fights like rakes, tariffs, any of the lessers, fuck, throw 2 Mechano Shredders on one. That can, you know, against certain armies, that can hold a flank.
That, oh, absolutely.
Send a jack over near that.
That's a tasty snack.
Yeah. and then, not to mention, you know, the Blight Archon itself, if it's Fury 4 or Fury 5, and it's got 1 or 2 initials, well, it's got to have at least one, but you know, if it can go in late game, it's going to be able to smack a lot more things than any of the other Archons can. If, you know, even if its battle group is dead, if it's on 4 Fury, it's getting 5 or 6 basic attacks. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
A late game heavy that's taken damage, or that can go and, you know, really put a hurt onto a Colossal or something else that's in, you know, its range. And it's still only an 8 to, what, 12 point model if you only want to put a lesser on it, probably.
I mean, 8 to 10, right? Like, it won't be that. Oh, you're right. Yeah, no, you're right. You have to put a model on it. You're right. Duh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm just saying. No, aren't most of the other Archons 8 points? Are there any of that are more expensive than that?
Isn't, like, one of them 9? Primal Archon, maybe?
No, I thought the Primal was 8.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't friggin' ran that guy yet, so.
I don't know. Most of the other Archons are probably somewhere 7, 8, 9 points. So, like, assuming that the Blight Archon stays about the same, you put a Harrier on it. You know, at the most expensive end, then it's 9 to 12 points, probably.
Yeah.
Right in that area.
Like, yep.
That's still not bad. And again, if it's Fury 4, like, for 12 points, that's putting out a ton of attacks late game. If it's got a ranged weapon and can play safe, or it has some support abilities for, like, the early game, so it's not just standing around, like, that might be good enough, honestly.
Oh, definitely. All right. So why don't we Why don't we wrap that up? We're going to see the rules in like a couple days, so let's not get too bogged down on theory. But you did want to mention that we got someone coming on the show.
You sure do. It's a man, a myth, a legend, probably a person.
Okay. You're keeping it pretty vague.
I try. It is the one and only Lord William Hungerford, BMMD Esquire III, Lord of Blood, the Gravewalker.
Woo! The crowd goes wild. That's right. We're going to get Hungerford back on. That'll be his, what, third appearance on our show? So I'm looking forward to talking with him about CID.
Yeah, that's second or third.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Probably third. I'm going to assume third. So he should be on, I think. Cutter is setting it up with him. I believe he said Friday. We're currently discussing times and, you know, everything else now. But it looks like it's going to be Friday-ish. So the CID is going to release on Wednesday. We're going to get to talk to him for a little bit about 2 days later. And, you know, go over the stuff that's in CID. If anybody has any questions after the CID drops, if there's things that you would like brought up to him, feel free to message me, Tyrone, Cutter, message the show. Find us on Discord. If there's something that, you know, brings up a good point when we've got him on, I have no problem asking him and saying, hey, you know, this got brought up as a question and it wasn't really answered. You know, what's the thought here? You know, maybe we can get some answers for people. And if not, it's just going to be nice to, you know, get his perspective on the CID, on the kinds of things that, you know, he's gotten in the last 2 days from the community, on the kind of things that he's looking for and on the kinds of things that may be changing. Because again, they're giving us the playtest rules, right? So as they continue to playtest stuff, they might find that, hey, this doesn't work, and we're looking at changing, you know, I don't know, like advanced deployment to ambush, or, you know, maybe this thing is going to gain magical because reasons. So it's important to realize that playtest rules can change, and if we can, you know, get a chance for that and get a chance to talk to them about, you know, what are some of the things they're looking at, absolutely bring that up.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good to get him on the show, get his perspective on Legion, kind of where it is, what needs to happen to make it a exciting faction, get people excited to play Legion again, and, you know, we'll see how long the CID lasts. Probably won't last longer than 2 weeks, though it seems it's kind of the maximum that they're willing to run it without having the ability to submit battle reports, so...
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to talk to him. It's going to be interesting just to get his perspective on things as far as things that, you know, have made it into the CID versus maybe haven't, you know, the kinds of changes. And just, I guess, this is like his, I think, one of his first CIDs is like head developer. I think he said he became halfway through the Strange Bedfellows, was it?
I believe that's right.
Yeah, so this is, I think, his first real CID doing a full... faction from, you know, the top. So getting his thoughts on, you know, things like what is Legion's niche now, because that's a thing that gets brought up a lot, is we used to kind of be the beast faction, but it doesn't seem that way anymore. So where does he as the head developer see the faction? What is the thing that he, you know, kind of sees us being able to do that nobody else can? Or what kind of things are they looking for the faction? Like, what was their thought process there? So it'll be neat to get some kind of clarification and answers we don't normally get. And honestly, Hungerford's just like a super cool dude. The couple times I've talked to him, like, he's always super nice. He's always happy to talk about the game and just really any nerd culture shit in general. So it's just going to be cool to talk to him again, honestly.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to having him back on and talking CID with him. So I think that'll about do it for this episode in about an hour. I'd like to remind everybody that Blightbringers merch is available. We've got patches and pins. Everyone that ordered one has them now, I believe. I'm going to have to send a patch to Emmanuel because apparently his got lost in the mail somehow, fell out of the packaging. Don't know what that's about. But yeah. If you want one, a link to that will also be in the notes. Just fill out the form, send us some money, and it will be on your way to you as soon as possible.
I still have your shirt to send you, by the way.
I was wondering about that. I was like, did it actually like come?
Closet. I've totally forgotten about it.
Hey, no worries.
I'll actually send that to you at some point.
All right, great. Let's see what else. CID is coming up. Make sure you register on the forums for that. I believe it's cid.privateerpress.com. Join us on the Discord. A link to that will be in the show notes. We make good use of our show notes. Please read them.
Yeah, I never do. Other people should.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 71 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, everybody. Have a nice day.